everybody. This is Chris.
And Kathy.
We wanted to take a minute to thank you all for tuning in. We appreciate every listener and are grateful for this platform.
Please help us share our vision by subscribing to our show through your favorite streaming app. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube at Petability Podcast.
Check out our ever-growing list of affiliates and sponsors. Simply go to the show notes for information and links.
And be sure to use our promo code PETPOD22, that's PETPOD22, on checkout to receive your discount from our affiliates. And now here's a word from our sponsor.
Hi, I'm Alon Landa, CEO of MedcoVet, and I'm a proud sponsor of Petability. We decided to partner with Chris and Kathy because, like them, we want to empower all pet owners who are trying to do the most for their pets. At MedcoVet, we specialize in advanced home laser therapy for pets. Laser therapy is a safe and effective treatment for common conditions like arthritis and wounds, and it relieves pain for most conditions caused by inflammation. With MedcoVet, pet owners can perform this treatment at home while receiving support from experienced clinicians. If you think your pet would benefit from healing at home, visit MedcoVet.com, and one of our clinical experts will work with you to determine if home laser therapy is the right fit for you and your pet. Tell them Petability sent you.
Everything that we eat or everything we feed them is going to have an effect on the body.
Welcome to Petability. I'm your host, Kathy Simon, certified veterinary technician and certified canine rehabilitation practitioner.
And I'm your host, Chris Cranston, licensed physical therapist and small animal physical rehabilitationist.
Our podcast provides interviews and information to help your pets live their best lives.
Good morning, Chris. How are you doing today?
Hey, Kathy. Excellent, excellent. I'm really, again, psyched up for our guest and topic today. It's going to be a good one.
I know. We have a great guest today. We have Dr. Judy Morgan from Naturally Healthy Pets, and we're going to be talking to her about food therapy today. And I was thinking about it all day yesterday because I was really excited about this topic, and it got me thinking a lot about food, which you know I love. I love food so much, right? But it started me thinking on this whole different path about how certain foods make me feel, sort of physically, but also emotionally. So for instance, yesterday I made a strawberry banana smoothie. And as I was, you know, getting prepared, I got out the strawberries and I picked out the perfect banana with just a little bit of speckle on it and some, you know, coconut water. And as I'm preparing it, I'm actually like, I'm excited about it. And it was delicious and it felt so good. And I would dare to even say that it elevated my mood. It had this whole physical and emotional aspect to it. And conversely, it made me start thinking about foods that I stay away from, right? Because for me, I try to steer away from red meats because they make me feel sluggish and heavy and sort of generally yucky. And that's just my body's response to that. So I kind of steer away. Sorry, no pun intended. I steer away from red meat because I know it won't make me feel well. So I was really surprised at how much of a physical and emotional response I had to food. And I wonder if pets have a similar experience. So, I mean, we know food has an effect on the overall health of our pets, but can it affect their mood and or their behavior?
Kathy, I just have one thought there because, you know, you talked about picking out the perfect strawberries and the perfect banana. Yeah. And, you know, the issue with our pets is that they have no choice.
They got no choice, right?
They only can eat what we provide.
Exactly.
So we need to know about nutrition and, you know, what we are putting into our pet's bodies.
And it started me thinking on this course of, you know, can food affect, you know, behavior in our pets? Can it affect their mood? And also, can we use food to our advantage for other aspects of our pet's health, like preventing disease or fighting disease? So I have so many questions about healthy food options and choices for our dogs and cats. I'm really interested to hear Dr. Morgan talk about the principles of food therapy and how it differs from conventional approaches to pet nutrition and what role food can play in successful aging of our pets.
Remember the old adage, right? You are what you eat. You know, everything starts with good nutrition, no matter what the problem is.
Before we get started, Chris, let me give the audience a little bit of background on our guest. Dr. Judy Morgan earned her doctorate from the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine. Throughout her 36-year career in clinical practice, she became a certified and accredited veterinary acupuncturist, chiropractor, and food therapist. Retiring from clinical practice in 2020, Dr. Morgan has since shifted her focus through her company, Naturally Healthy Pets, which she offers educational content, provides online consultations for clients, as well as resources and products. Dr. Morgan has also established herself as an author, having written seven books, Chris, with the most recent one that I saw on her website is called Keeping Your Pets Naturally Healthy, Holistic Care and Nutrition for Dogs and Cats. In that book, she shares holistic therapies, recipes, tips parents can use to help their pets heal rather than living with chronic diseases. Dr. Morgan educates and empowers owners by promoting healthy nutrition, advocating for natural supplements, and recommending alternative treatments to help pets maintain optimal health. So in her spare time, Dr. Morgan also works with Cavalier King Charles and Toy Spaniel Rescue and Monkey's House, a dog hospice and senior sanctuary. So please welcome to the show, Dr. Judy Morgan.
Welcome, Dr. Morgan. So happy to have you here.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Dr. Morgan, can you start off sharing with us the inspiration behind creating Naturally Healthy Pets and what motivated you to create this resource focusing on natural well-being of pets?
Well, my life, I like to say, has been a series of fortunate accidents, and things have just fallen into my path, and you really have the choice of you step into them, you step over them, or you run the other direction. Usually what I find when something falls into my path is that I'm supposed to step into it, even if I'm very resistant at the beginning. And so I was offered the opportunity to become the face and name of some products from New Zealand here in this country for pet owners. I kind of said, well, I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to market products. I don't want to market products. I'm not going to do it. And so the products showed up in my veterinary clinic anyway. So I started giving away the product. It was a dental health product, which we still have. It's our number one seller, and a wellness product containing deer antler velvet, green lip muscle, some really good things. So I gave away some of the products. Michelle Allen at Monkey's House with her senior dogs that all had mobility issues and cancers and heart disease, kidney disease, liver disease, you name it. I gave her some of the product. I said, Michelle, try this stuff out. Tell me if it works. And I got to figure out what I'm doing with all this. And she started texting me within a few days saying, oh my gosh, these dogs are running around. They are not acting like seniors. They are crazy. How do I make them go back to being couch potatoes? Yeah. And I said, I don't think you can. So then we started, selling this to our clients and saying, please try this on your pets. Give us your feedback. We want to know. And the feedback was just incredible. And I need more of this stuff coming in from New Zealand because it is so incredible. So that sort of started it. And it just started growing little by little. So we started all of that in the fall of 2016. And after a year or so, we said, maybe we should look and see if there's other holistic products, because I had products in my clinics that I was using for my patients. And I thought, well, we could build a website and put those on there as well. Why should this only be available to the patients who come see me in person? We should have these things available to others as well. And then I started getting more and more clients who were driving anywhere from 3 to 7 hours each way to come to my clinics and having an online platform where they could order their products and not have to drive that far to come get a refill on something. It just made sense. And so then we started looking for other products that fit the model of what we were looking for as far as being organic and not harmful to our pets and being able to find things that would replace all of the chemical products that are pushed so commonly. And it just kind of kept growing. We moved the business on January 1st to North Carolina in 2020. And my daughter has grown the business immensely. We've gone from being in my garage to being in a 7,000 square foot warehouse with about a dozen employees. And we are internationally known as a good source of information and education for pet parents. Giving pet parents knowledge empowers them to be able to care for their pets the way that they really should be cared for. It also empowers them to have different conversations with the veterinary staff. And for me, if you're walking into a veterinary practice, whether your pet is sick or healthy, you want to know what you need to get out of that visit. Are you there just because you need updated booster shots? And do they really need those booster shots? You need to be able to make educated decisions on what your pet really needs so they don't just fall into the one size fits all category. And so it needs to be a conversation and not just a, here you go. This is what we do for everybody. And the same with diet and food. I'm trying to get people away from the highly processed foods that are made with really poor quality ingredients, moving them over as far as they can get toward a whole food diet, and basically giving people the education to stand up for their pets and be their advocate.
Do you think that these processed foods are maybe one of the sources for so many food allergies? Is that a factor?
Absolutely. So this is a problem. Processed food is a highly processed food is a problem for the human industry. It's a problem for the pet food industry, but even more so for our pets, because all of the waste ingredients from human food go into animal feed, whether that's pet feed or livestock feed, poultry feed. So it is a problem for all of us. We know that a lot of the chemicals that are used in the processing of food are highly inflammatory. They're ruining the gut microbiome, which is the good bacteria, good yeast, good viruses that live in our guts, live in our pets' guts, that are really important in creating a healthy immune system. So damage from GMOs, from glyphosate, from fumigants that are used on grains and legumes and dried pet feed ingredients, grocery store waste that is ground up and used in animal feed. There are so many factors that are affecting the ability of our pets to be very healthy and thrive versus just surviving. Absolutely is contributing to immune system disease, contributing to allergies, contributing to chronic inflammation. So arthritis, pancreatitis, nephritis, hepatitis, anything with an itis on the end, that's an inflammatory reaction. And all of that inflammation is created by what we put into the body. So if we want our dogs to live to be 20 years old across the board, and we want our cats to live to be 30 years old across the board, we are going to have to change what we are putting into our pets, putting in and on. So pesticides, the chemical pesticides that have become so popular to, quote, prevent fleas and ticks are harmful. It's a pesticide. We don't feed pesticides to our children or ourselves. Why are we doing that to our animals and expecting a good outcome?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, what really drove it home for me was when I was watching your video, when you talked about feed versus food. Yeah. And then I was like, I would never want to call what I give my dog feed. That's for chickens. It's not, you know what I mean? It's not food. And so at that point really drove it home there when I was like, feed versus food. What do I want to give my dog? I want to give my dog food.
And pet food is regulated the same as livestock feed. Mm. So they really are regulating pet feed, not pet food.
Not dog food.
So that was a very intentional nomenclature that you used. Mm-hmm. And are you trying to change what the, quote, pet food industry calls their products? Or is it just more of an awareness thing to your audience?
We have asked AFCO and FDA. AFCO is the American Association of Feed Control Officials. They sort of set the rules for what is allowed in animal feed, whether it's livestock or pet, whatever. So they basically make the definitions that say this is what is allowed. The spent or expired grocery store waste. So that's all the dairy products, all the bakery products that are expired or spoiled. They go in trucks and they get transported. There was just a great FDA. Basically, they went after a company in California, Reconserve. And it's a company that takes that grocery store waste and processes it to put into animal feed, including pet feed. And when FDA did their inspection, they found a very large pile of all this grocery store waste in the containers, not in the containers, outside in a parking lot, not covered, rodent infested, birds going through it, all of the grease and things from motor vehicles in the parking lot was running off into this. And that all of that in that mound was then being processed to be fed to animals. It is a huge problem.
It's so difficult to weigh through all of these dog foods on the market, the newer ones, the new high-end ones. And aren't they required to put that on their label that they're putting these things in our dog's food?
Oh, so like the dried bakery products, it's going to say on the label dried bakery products.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, if you're a pet parent, do you know where that comes from? Do you know what that really is? No. So they can, the labeling, and we, that's one of the things that we do when we've got blogs and videos on trying to teach people how to read pet food labels. It's very difficult. And we also have problems. So the huge recall in the end of 2018, beginning of 2019 was for excess vitamin D in pet food, because the vitamin mineral mix that is added to the food to actually get the nutrients up to the level that we need for our pets to survive, somebody miscalculated, put too much vitamin D in there, and vitamin D will cause kidney failure and death in high enough amounts. So tens of thousands of animals died before they finally came out with the recall, which was across many, many brands, because there's only a few companies that make those synthetic vitamin mineral mixes, and everybody buys from the same couple of companies. So if there's a mistake, it's going to go across many, many brands. So I don't like to see that synthetic vitamin mineral mix added in food, because when I see that, I say, oh boy, what if there's a mistake again? And the problem is we have to have thousands of pets get sick or die before somebody raises a red flag and says, I think I see a problem. So it's very, very difficult to get to that level. And then it requires a lot of investigation. It requires investigation. It requires enough consumer complaints to FDA and to their state regulators in order for anybody to even go in and start investigating something. So it's a big process.
Well, this has all been like really enlightening. Can we pivot to the positive side of things?
Sure, absolutely.
and you know, move from like, you know, I mean, again, this is very, very educational, but then what should we do? You know, I know that you have this very unique certification. In fact, I'd never heard of it before, the CVFT or Chinese Veterinary Food Therapy certification. And, you know, again, emphasizing the importance of natural diet for pets.
Right.
So can you elaborate on the key principles of a naturally healthy diet for dogs and cats?
Sure. So there is no such thing as people food. There is such a thing as food. There's food and there's feed. If we are feeding our pets food that we would eat, then we are feeding them healthy food, unless you're feeding them Doritos. But if you look at what is a healthy diet for us, meats and vegetables, those are great because we know what they are. So if you see beef, you know you're getting beef muscle. If you see beef liver, you know you're getting beef liver. So we want things that are human grade ingredients that are going into our pet food. We don't want waste products. We don't want cancerous cuts of meat going into the food. We want real food. And then when we look at the food, just like Kathy was saying at the beginning, everything that we eat or everything we feed them is going to have an effect on the body. It can be something. So this is my easiest way for people to think of effects that it might have on the body. So we talk about thermal energetics of food. That's, does it add warming to the body? Does it add cooling to the body? Or does it have a neutral effect? Think when you eat a spicy meal with a lot of curry or cayenne pepper in it, and you can feel the burn, you know, hot chili peppers, you feel the burn when they're going down. Well, that's adding warmth to the body. And then as humans, we start to sweat if we eat something that's really that hot and spicy. And that is a way for the body to actually cool itself. And then in the summer, if it's really hot, what do we go for? We go for something like ice cream or dairy products. We go for watermelon straight out of the refrigerator. And it's not the fact that it was in the refrigerator. It's the fact that watermelon has a lot of moisture and has a cooling effect on the body. So we can look at it from the Chinese perspective of yin and yang. Yin is cooling and moisturizing. Yang is hot and drying. So all foods are categorized into their thermal energetics. Are they warming? Are they neutral? Are they cooling? And then we can go as far as, are they cold or hot? So there's a broad spectrum that we can go across. And then we can look at our pets and say, well, is my pet cold? Are they always curled up in a little ball, trying to sleep next to the fireplace or next to the heater? Do they like to burrow under the blankets? Do they snuggle up right next to me? Do they not drink very much water? That's a pet that is colder. Do we have, go more with dogs right now, but do we have a pet who's panting, who has excessive thirst, who has a dry coat, who sleeps sprawled out on the floor, wants to sleep on the air conditioning vents, has to have the fan on at night? Those are pets that are too hot. So if we have a pet who's too hot, we're going to choose food that is going to be cooling to the body. If we have a pet who's too cold, we're going to choose food that is warming to the body. So that's the simplest steps that we can take. But then there are other properties of food that we can use if we have a pet who's out of balance or has a disease state. So let's say you have an animal in liver failure or heart failure, and they've got fluid buildup in their lungs or fluid buildup in their abdomen. Well, that is a damp condition. There's too much moisture. So what we do is we add things to the diet that will drain damp. And so we have a long list of them, things like celery and dandelion and asparagus and radishes to help move that fluid. Can we do it with drugs? Yes. Can we use less drugs if we use foods that are also targeting that condition? And that's the beauty of this. So I design diets based on, what do we need to do? Do we need to warm the animal? Do we have a cancer that is, we look at the Chinese medicine origin of that cancer. Is it because we had a blood deficiency where the tongue was pale and dry, the coat was dry, and blood wasn't moving, energy wasn't moving well enough, and we got this lump formed? Do we need, first of all, we need to move the lump. So we need to move the energy or the qi. We need to resolve stagnation because a lump is an area where the energy and the blood are not flowing. Do we need to build blood? And then we look at foods that fall into those different categories, and we use those for healing. So for instance, in traditional medicine, a diagnosis that we get way too often, particularly in our kitty cats, is chronic kidney failure. And from a traditional medicine standpoint, it's a one size fits all. As soon as you see a change in a kidney enzyme value, the first thing you're going to hear is, oh, they need to be on this dry kibble. That's absolutely the worst thing we could do for an animal in kidney failure. But for a from a traditional Chinese veterinary medicine or TCVM standpoint, every animal is an individual. So we might have two dogs that have kidney disease. One of them is hot and dry and panting and drinking a lot. The other one is actually cold, not drinking very much, and is leaking urine. They are two totally opposite sets of symptoms, and we would feed them pretty opposite to each other from a food standpoint. So we want to look at all the symptoms that we have, and it's not a one size fits all. So that is the beauty of food therapy. We can tailor diets to the individual symptoms that that pet is showing. So we have diets for literally anything. My Yin and Yang nutrition book basically divides things down. Okay, you've got heart disease in a cold dog, heart disease in a warm dog, heart disease where the blood is pooling, heart disease where they've got fluid buildup. So we go through all the different organ systems, which are all the Chinese elements, and talk about, based on what symptoms the pet is showing within that disease, that's how we pick the diet.
What about diseases that we don't know a lot about? So I'm just going to pick SARDs, for instance. So like our sudden acquired retinal degeneration dogs, and we think that blindness might just be or a syndrome or symptom of the disease. We don't really know or understand its origin or how to treat it. Do we treat that pet as an individual symptomatically? How would you treat a patient where we don't really know a whole lot about the disease?
Well, that's the great thing. We don't have to know the disease and we don't have to have a disease diagnosis. We just, from a Chinese medicine standpoint, if you went to a TCVM practitioner, they would evaluate your pet's tongue color, size, shape, whether it had any coatings on it. They would feel the pulses and determine where there were excesses in the body or deficiencies in the body. They would do a complete physical exam, but they use all of their senses, including the sense of smell, and go over the animal hands-on, feeling for where do we have sensitivities on which acupuncture points. So there's an awful lot that can go into that. And then you can treat that animal based on, okay, his tongue is dry and pale. That's a blood deficiency. Great. He's hiding under the blankets. He's cold. Okay. We know what we need to do with that. So we use all of our senses to then make a diet. And sometimes depending on how serious the condition is, how long standing the condition is, we may add herbs. And the herbs are just a more powerful food therapy. So sometimes if we've got something where we're kind of in more food needs to be, but then we also will determine, do we need to add herbal support? Do we need to add acupuncture support? What other things? There's also something called Tui Na, which is sort of like a combination chiropractic massage that we can teach pet parents to do. So the pet parent becomes very involved in helping their pet to heal, who comes in with a pet with cancer or heart failure, and they're given a very short prognosis. A lot of times we can turn that prognosis around and we can take something that is in an acute situation and dial it back to chronic. So for instance, my dog that was in stage D mitral valve disease, heart failure, when I took him to the cardiologist, who's a good friend of mine, always worked on my dogs. And he said, I'm really sorry, your dog's in stage D. It's the final stages. He's probably got a couple of months left to live. And I said, thank you very much. That's great. We'll change his medications around and then I'm going to go change around what I'm doing. And instead of 2 months, I got 24 months of high quality life. We see this all the time. You mentioned at the beginning, Monkey's House Senior Dog Hospice and Sanctuary. In order for a dog to get admitted or taken into Monkey's House, they have to have a terminal diagnosis. They have to be homeless and have no one to care for them. So many of them come from high kill shelters. They get picked up off the streets. They go in, the veterinarian looks at them and says, oh my gosh, this dog has a grade 6 murmur. The labs say that the dog is in end stage kidney disease. It's also got liver disease and it's got 3 mammary tumors hanging off of it. This dog needs to be put to sleep. And they end up at Monkey's House. And food therapy is very, very critical. It's probably the most important piece of what is done at Monkey's House. All the dogs get incredible veterinary care. So if they need to see the cardiologist, they do. If they need more lab work, they get it. If they need surgery or dental care, whatever needs to be done, they get. Many of those dogs that were given a death sentence, their life expectancy changes totally. Yeah. Really powerful what we can do.
It really is. It made me think of this dog that I saw a couple of years ago, this wonderful black lab who had been a retired service dog. She was somebody's guiding eyes dog. She was a seeing eye dog and she was retired and they had to get another dog and they placed her with one of my clients. And shortly after that, she was diagnosed with a really aggressive cancer and they opted to do, this dog is about 10 years old at this point, and they opted to do surgery and they removed her spleen and the owner went full on like into food therapy, making her dog food, doing all the things that you were talking about. And I was going on a 1-year sabbatical. And so when I saw that dog after surgery, I said my goodbyes. I said, I love you. Goodbye. You won't be here when I get back in my mind. And when I came back, there she was. And she was looking really good and she was really happy. And that dog got almost 2 years longer than her prognosis of 3 months after her splenectomy. And it was good time too. It wasn't like miserable time. It was really good time. Yeah,
exactly. It's just really powerful.
So Dr. Morgan, you know, this all sounds great. I mean, I get everything you're saying as far as, you know, whole foods and things that, you know, we would feed ourselves and specific things for specific conditions, illnesses, and so forth. But what do you say to those pet parents like me that would say, I'm never going to prepare my dog's diet? I mean, you just got done saying, you know, these pet owners are all in and they have to, you know, be a partner in this, but that's just not me. I want my dogs to live, you know, forever, as they say, but I can't see myself spending the time, the money. I'm sure a lot of people have, you know, income, you know, issues with some of this, because I think it is more expensive. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a myth. I don't know. How do you talk to these people? And well, good. So I want you to talk, you know, to expound on that, you know, the people that are unwilling or unable to prepare or cook, you know, their dog's meals, even though in our minds, we know that we don't want to feed the process. We don't want to feed the kibble.
So we have a lot of options. There are actually two or three companies that make diets according to TCVM food therapy. So they actually are available commercially. And the other thing is you can change. So for instance, when I first started getting into food therapy, my office manager had a beagle puppy. And this puppy was just wild, crazy, off the wall, and just untrainable. And she said, I don't know what to do with this dog. I've never had a dog that's this difficult. And I said, well, what are you feeding the dog? And she said, I'm feeding a lamb and rice kibble. And I said, okay, well, you have a hot, energetic puppy, and you are feeding a kibble, which is energetically hot, and it's lamb and rice, which are both energetically hot. You are literally throwing paper on that dog's fire every time you feed him. And I said, you know, she didn't have kids and she didn't have time to cook or anything. I said, well, let's just start with something really simple. Let's just move to something that it would be more cooling. So I think we went to a beef and something kibble. So it was a very simple change for her. She just bought a different protein flavor. And within 3 weeks, she's like, oh my gosh, he's like a different dog. He's trainable. He's calmed down. He's house trained. This was amazing. And so that was very early in my food therapy. So if you happen to work in my clinic, or if you happen to be one of my pets, everything gets tested on you. So it's always kind of fun. So it can be something as simple as you can keep feeding the same thing, but maybe you need to change the protein. And maybe you need to add some fresh food to the bowl. So if I say to you, well, look, your dog's got, so you were talking about behavior at the beginning. One of the Chinese medicine diagnoses for behavior problems is liver qi stagnation, which is basically frustration, anger builds up. And so a lot of these animals on lab work, we'll see elevated liver enzymes. We'll see red eyes in these animals. And they're grumpy and they lash out and they may show signs of aggression. Well, okay, we need to move the liver qi stagnation. And again, maybe you're feeding a food that you feel comfortable with, whether it's a kibble or whatever, hopefully a decent kibble. But okay, can we throw something in the bowl or use something for treats that might help? Could you buy some dandelion root capsules and use those as treats? Something very simple. So you can just put a topper on there where you don't even have to cook a whole meal. You could say, well, I'm just going to go get some herbal support for that because there's a lot of herbs that are available in different combinations. A lot of different companies have those. Certainly, yes, if you go all in, you're going to solve the problem more quickly and you're going to probably get a better result. But if you can't go all in, then you look at, well, what foods might work for that? Would celery be a great thing to help my pet with whatever we're dealing with? Great. I'm going to see if my pet will take celery as a treat. And it's really kind of amazing. There's something called zoopharmacognosy, where the animal knows what they need. And so, for instance, I love to grow herbs. And I have had times where I'm trying to plant herbs and my dogs are eating them as soon as I put them in the ground because they know that that is something that they need. So if you have an herb garden, you can let your pets go out there and wander around and pick what they think they need. But it doesn't have to be all in. It can be something simple. Dandelion greens are, so everybody, Everybody hates dandelions. I look at my yard and I go, yay, dandelions, because I have clients who grow dandelions purposely in their garden. They grow these beautiful greens because they are so, so beneficial for our pets for a lot of reasons. So we need to start looking at nature and saying, wow, there's some good stuff out here instead of constantly trying to kill it.
My mind is just swimming too, as you're talking and you were talking about animals that are grumpy. And I was thinking about these, you know, these poor hyperthyroid cats who are just like, they're so grouchy and they're so hungry, and so many aspects, so many patients I think we can apply this to. Even in rehab, some of our CCL tear dogs, our degenerative myelopathy dogs, our IVDD dogs, there's so many, it applies to everyone. It can use this for everyone.
Absolutely.
Where does a probiotic fit into this? Because you talked earlier about, you know, the biome of the gut, and I've heard the term that the gut is the brain of the body. And so do you, you know, believe that most dogs should be on a probiotic given what we're, you know, typically feeding them as a uninformed owner?
Probably. We should be adding high quality probiotics. And unfortunately, there's a lot of low quality probiotics on the market. So I would just caution people, look for a pure probiotic that doesn't have a base ingredient like rice powder or animal digest, rendered ingredients. So we want to look for a pure probiotic. That is one thing. And probiotics, once they're open, need to be stored in the refrigerator. But particularly if we're not feeding the highest quality diet, then probiotics can be critical for gut health. So you were asking about allergies at the beginning. Allergies are a problem associated with leaky gut. It's also, there's a genetic component. But when we have leaky gut, which is basically the gut lining is swollen and is allowing the larger particles of protein molecules to get into the bloodstream. And then the bloodstream says, oh my gosh, foreign invader, let's react. So that is why we have so many more allergy problems than we used to, because we have a lot of leaky gut and we have a lot of dysbiosis, which is an imbalance in that gut microbiome. So probiotics can be really healthy. Everybody looks at bacterial probiotics, but another one that is often overlooked and can be extremely healthy, particularly if your pet has been on antibiotics, and antibiotic means against the bacteria. So when your pet is on an antibiotic, it might kill the bacteria that's causing the urinary tract infection or the skin infection, but it also just killed off everything in the gut that we need for life and our immune system. And so while they are on antibiotics, Saccharomyces boulardii, which is actually a yeast probiotic, is excellent, excellent addition. So if they are on antibiotics and then after the antibiotics are finished, continue the Saccharomyces and a good probiotic, bacterial probiotic, for a good couple of weeks, most of these animals will come around. You can also make kimchi or fermented vegetables at home very easily, and that's good for you. It's good for your pets. Not all pets like it. Sauerkraut is a fermented vegetable that you can add small amounts to their food. You can really ferment anything. There are fermented goat milk products on the market, which are a great addition because they're going to supply natural digestive enzymes, natural probiotics. It's a really good nutrition source in addition. So there's a lot of different ways that we can approach that. But yes, we should be doing something to support gut health. I don't give my dogs probiotics all the time. My dogs have incredibly good gut health. They are on only human grade ingredients. And I'm not making my own food for my dogs. I have about 5 different companies that I rotate their foods. I rotate their proteins. One of the things that has been a fallacy is we're told to put the same thing in the bowl twice a day, every day, never change it. It'll cause a problem. Don't add any human food to it, which again, that's just food, because you'll make it unbalanced. Well, we already talked about the fact that they're not balanced to begin with, even though they say they are. And our pets should have rotation. We don't eat the same bowl of dry Cheerios twice a day, every day, with a vitamin mineral mix added to it and say that that is going to make us thrive. And that is really the wrong way to feed our pets. So even if you are a kibble feeder, then anything you can do to top that bowl with something healthy. Eggs are a superfood. Blueberries, steamed dark leafy greens like the dandelion or kale or broccoli. So if you're having broccoli for dinner and you've just steamed some broccoli, take the tougher stems and throw those in the dog food bowl. If you're having a baked chicken breast don't give them the fat and the skin, but you could cut off some of the fresh meat and add that as a topper on the bowl. Mushrooms are incredibly, incredibly powerful additions to the bowl. And I don't really care what kind of mushrooms, but they should be steamed or sauteed. So coconut oil is a great thing for that. To really release their properties. You can add a powdered mushroom supplement as well, but mushrooms are very close in DNA to people, actually, and they support gut health probably better than any other food that we can put in the bowl.
One other question I wanted to ask is, I read also on your website that you talked about rotating, you know, foods and such, mm-hmm. but that diet should change over the course of your pet's lifespan. Can you talk a little bit about that? You know, what changes?
It kind of depends on what you've been feeding and what issues your pet might be having. I have 5 dogs right now, and they all just kind of rotate through the same things. I have one who doesn't tolerate rabbit, so which is kind of weird, but he doesn't tolerate rabbit, so he never gets rabbit on his platter. I have another one who doesn't tolerate beef very well. It just makes her irpy, so she doesn't get beef on her platter. But otherwise, we're rotating through everything. We do see changes, for instance, in older pets, and it kind of depends what they've been fed their entire life. Some senior pets, particularly dogs, will be very hot and dry and panting. And so we need to get more moisture in there. We need to add more blood tonics. We need to help cool them down. Most senior pets, I think, tend to fall more the other way, where they're too cold. And maybe they need a slight adjustment in their vitamin mineral load, the fat load. Dogs and cats have zero requirement for carbohydrates. AFCO has zero requirement for carbohydrates in their food regulations. And so that's where we get into a lot of trouble, because kibble, dry kibble, the extruded dry kibble is going to be over 50% carbohydrates. Otherwise, it doesn't go through the extruding machine. And our pets have zero requirement for that. With that said, my dog that lived for 24 months with his heart disease diagnosis, the medications that we had to add in and change around were affecting his kidneys. And so at some point during that 24 months, I did have to back off a little bit on his protein, and I put in sweet potato. So that's a carbohydrate that I normally would not feed to my dogs. But in his case, it brought his potassium levels up and it kept his kidneys happier. So we make adjustments based on what is going on with that individual pet. We sometimes find that older pets have a higher requirement for zinc. So we just have to look at the individual and say, yeah, you're showing some deficiencies here. And usually in our seniors, we have more of deficient problems where something is lacking. They don't have as much energy. They've got shaky, trembly legs. They're losing muscle mass. Whereas in our young animals, they tend to have more excesses because they're just full of vim and vigor and racing around like crazy ones. So we want to balance those. So if they're really excess in some way, whether they're hot or they've got that liver cheese stagnation, then we want to address that to try to balance them out so that they have a longer, healthier lifespan. And then as seniors, a lot of times we have to support them more because they are losing that muscle mass. Their digestive abilities aren't as good. So a lot of times I don't feed my dogs digestive enzymes every day, but when I have a senior, then digestive enzymes might be more critical for them. Vitamin D levels in our pets are commonly very low. I do recommend that when you have annual lab work done, that you ask for a vitamin D level because it's not normally done. And for instance, my dog who's 16 and a half, he has heart disease, he has bladder cancer, he has some neurologic issues, you know, pick a problem. He doesn't know it. He's really happy. He races around and plays with the puppies. So that's all good. But his vitamin D levels, when tested, were very low. So he is on a supplement for that. And we see that we get vitamin D levels that are very low in animals with any kind of bowel disorders. So inflammatory bowel disease, pancreatitis, heart disease, cancers. A lot of times those animals are low in vitamin D. And a lot of times those diseases are being caused by that lack of vitamin D. So it's we don't want to just supplement vitamin D because excess vitamin D is deadly. So you should always test first and don't use human supplements because they're always way too concentrated and you will cause problems.
Can I shift gears here? Because I I want to talk about poop. Is anybody ready to talk about poop yet?
Sure.
Because I think you can learn a lot from poop as a veterinary technician. And for a long time, I worked at an avian practice, and I learned everything about this bird's health by what their droppings look like. Just about everything from what their droppings look like. Tell us, what can we learn from our dog's poop? What its consistency, its color, its odor, what can we learn?
Oh my gosh, do you have 6 hours? I actually have a blog talking about different consistencies of poop and what they mean. So that might be worth checking out. It's a few years old, and it actually has a picture of one of my dogs sitting on the toilet. So it's my tricolor Cavalier. So if we've got blood or mucus or both in the poop, that's what we call a hot diarrhea. And so we want to use a cooling. I actually have two bland diarrhea diets, one for hot diarrhea if we've got blood and mucus, and the other one's for a cold diarrhea, which has undigested food in it, doesn't have as much odor. It'll be paler in color and very watery. So even our bland diet, the old crappy chicken and rice and beef hamburger and rice is not where we want to go, because they don't digest rice very well anyway. So that's not a good thing. So we use different bland diets based on whether we've got a hot or cold diarrhea. So this is, again, where food therapy and thermal energies can be really helpful. Your dog should have a nice, solid, small stool that is easy to pick up and doesn't leave a mark or a smear on the floor. That is ideal. And we can get kind of anything in between, from watery to rock hard. A lot of times when we have constipation, we see that white chalky stool, and you're a raw feeder. It's just, you've got too much bone in there. And the stool should be consistent from one day to the next. So people, again, this myth of, oh, if you're going to transition your dog from one thing to another, you need to do the 25% and then the 50% and then the 75%. I never do that with my dogs, but they all have healthy guts. My oldest guy probably has the least healthy gut, just because he has some absorption issues associated with age and everything else that he has going on. But even him, his stools are, for the most part, really good. So if you have a pet with a healthy gut, you're going to be able to change proteins and change between companies. And the reason I rotate and change between companies with my dogs and my cats is, let's just say one of those recipes that you're feeding has a micro mineral deficiency, let's just say there's a manganese deficiency. Well, manganese is really critical for cruciate ligament health. So if you feed the same diet day in and day out, and that particular recipe happens to be a little bit low in manganese, over time, you could be setting your pet up for a problem. Let's say one of those recipes has a little bit of an excess something. Well, if you're feeding the same, for instance, copper, we see so much copper storage disease. So if you're feeding a diet that is on the higher end of the allowances for copper, then you may have a pet who has a problem with that. So the rotation kind of helps even things out over time, just like how we eat. It's really amazing that pet parents will make themselves crazy trying to make sure that what they're putting in the bowl is absolutely perfect for their pets. Well, I have never made myself crazy about what I was putting on my breakfast, lunch, and dinner plate, or my kids' breakfast, lunch, and dinner plate. I remember when my daughter was young, she absolutely refused to eat meat. And so this is a growing child from like ages 4 to 9. She refused to eat meat. And she said, "I just don't like it." And I was so upset when I would go to the pediatrician. I'm like, she's not getting all of her vitamins and minerals and blah, blah, blah. And they were like, "Oh, don't worry about it. It'll work out over time." And I thought, well, there's a great, it's going to work itself out. That's good. Okay. I don't have to be crazy. But yet when we're feeding our pets, and again, this is kind of one of those myths that's been perpetuated by the large pet food companies and the veterinarians, is that you can never have any variation and it always has to be the same. And that's absolutely the wrong way to feed. So even if you're a kibble feeder, rotate brands, rotate proteins, find two or three that you really like that your pet does well with, and say, okay, well, and you can say, I'm going to feed this one for a week and then I'll feed another one. Or you can be like me and say, well, for breakfast, you got this. And for dinner, you're getting whatever I pull out of the refrigerator next. It always has to be fed at room temperature or body temperature, somewhere between 70 and 100 degrees. Never feed cold food. If you feed like a frozen treat, that's fine. But we don't want all their meals to be cold. That from a digestion standpoint is really bad.
Now, one of the things that just wanted to mention in our, you know, brief conversation with you, Dr. Judy, is I've learned that my Cavaliers, Baxter and Julep, are cold based on your description. I'm definitely going to have their vitamin D levels checked the next time that I go to the vet, who is a integrative veterinarian, much like yourself. And
awesome.
And I did want to mention to people too, because I think one of the other myths that we have to debunk is that you have to choose one or the other, right? I can't tell my conventional, you know, Western trained veterinarian that I'm actually, you know, doing things that are more natural because they're going to say I can't, and it's going to, you know, rock the relationship. Or, you know, if you choose to continue to feed kibble or what have you, I think you can discuss it with a holistic veterinarian and come up to, you know, you said there's a lot of compromises in the sense of, you know, just make one simple change and see how that works. So that was fantastic. And then the final thing is, it took a long time to find a diet that worked for these Cavaliers. And the main issue that I'm trying to address is they will suddenly stop eating it and there's an issue with diarrhea. Well, I feel like I have to explore that because now I don't give them any treats. I don't change their diet at all because we landed on something that they will eat consistently. And for the most part, their poops are pretty good. So this has been incredibly enlightening. So I'm sure it will be for our listeners as well. This is just fantastic.
Can we talk about how our listeners can find Dr. Morgan? Because I'm thinking I might need an individual consultation for my
Me too.
I was just thinking, oh no.
So for consultations, I have very limited availability, but we do have a list of about a dozen integrative and holistic veterinarians that we work with. So if you email for a consultation, you may end up with a consultation with me, or you may end up with a list. So for instance, for consultations for cancer cases, we actually have two holistic veterinarians that just revel in being able to treat cancer cases. And so I'm like, well, that's great, because that takes something off my plate. So we do have a list of really good veterinarians that we will send you if I am not able to take the consultation. So that is something that we've worked hard to find veterinarians who are like-minded. So we do have that available. And then our website, drjudymorgan.com, also has a link to our educational resources, which is Dr. Judy U. And we have probably 40 different courses on there. They're not all given by me. We have courses for cat owners, for dog owners, for horse owners, and we have a lot of different veterinarians who present different courses. So if you're interested in raw feeding, we have courses on how to get started with that. If you're interested in making your own food, we have courses on that. Probably our most popular courses are the Homemade Food for Dogs 101, the Cat Longevity and Dog Longevity, two separate courses. And then we do have two courses on traditional Chinese veterinary medicine food therapy. So if people really want to dive deeper into that, there's a basic course and then there's a more advanced course. So if you take the first one and you say, wow, I want to know even more about this, then you can take the advanced one as well.
I also wanted to mention on the website that you have many resources for free. PDF downloads and things. And I signed up and I've started getting your emails, and you know, that's wonderful. I'm learning, you know, as we speak.
I mean, we have more courses that'll be coming out in this spring, but we are having an event in Orlando, Florida, October 12th and 13th. And we have seven speakers from around the world. It's an international event on natural pet care. So we have speakers from the Czech Republic, from Australia, Ireland, the UK, Canada, and the US. So I would say definitely check that out. It'll be 500 like-minded people learning for an entire weekend in Orlando. So we're really excited about that.
So is the audience for pet owners, or is it other professionals?
Both. So they're kind of the 2.0 pet parents that really want to dive deeper into natural care. So we're going to have speakers talking about cancer prevention and treatment with food and herbs. We have one speaker who's talking about ear infections because that's such a huge problem. We have speakers talking on endocrine diseases and adrenal gland stress. So we actually have a lot of veterinarians, holistic veterinarians, that some of them are just getting started in the holistic field that will be there. A lot of veterinary technicians and a lot of pet parents. So I would say it's probably going to be a mix across the board. A lot of people who are in the pet industry, whether they have a pet store, pet walking business, something where they want to be able to give more information to other people. So it's across the board.
Well, thank you, Dr. Morgan. You may see my name come across your email for a consultation of my itchy pug. Dr. Morgan, thank you for joining us today. We learned so much, and I'm sure our audience did as well. And we'll be sure to put all your contact information in our show notes.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed our show.
Follow us on social media at Petability Podcast.
And please check out our affiliates and sponsors.
Simply go to the show notes for information and links.
Thank you, and tune in next time.